Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And this evening, our special guest is our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who has taught at the university level, was in the education department during the Reagan administration, has testified before Congress, has written a number of books, which we do carry here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we'll talk more about those later. But this evening, Dr. Cuddy is going to be going into the articles that he writes for News with Views. And if you don't go to newswithviews.com and pull down his articles, which are posted there every week, why, shame on you. Even more than that, I suggest you go to the main page, the home page for News with Views, and pull up all of his articles and copy them and put them into a loose leaf folder and review them on a regular basis, because the information is fascinating, the documentation is accurate, and Dr. Cuddy will give you an overview of what's going on today, which is unparalleled. Well, good evening, Dr. Cuddy. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I know it's late back there, and I appreciate so much your being with us. So what are we going to be talking about this evening?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the latest column I have on News with Views is titled "The New Edition of the Bible Literacy Project's Textbook Still Has Problems." Now, it's really an important article. As soon as I say the title, somebody listening may say, "Oh yes, I remember several weeks ago he was talking about this. Aha, that's very very nice and interesting." And well, you know, I'd wish he'd talk about Iraq or something like that. But I want to stress something which apparently slips by a lot of people. Most of the listeners to this show and many other shows are adults. And what you need to appreciate is what's going on in the schools. There has been, and we've talked in the past about Antonio Gramsci and an assault upon the culture. And what you need to remember is while all of these other issues are very important, Iraq and 9/11, the economy and so on, if this nation is going to be undermined, as one of the founders said, it's going to come from within. We probably won't be defeated by somebody attacking us externally, but it'll probably be from within. And most civilizations in the past have faced a demise because of internal strife and moral decay. And so what's important is that education is the one place. School is the one place youngsters are required to go. Sure, they're influenced by art and music and television and so on, but the school is one place they're actually required to go. And if you think the people who are trying to change society have missed that point, you're sadly mistaken. They know exactly what's going on. They know exactly what they have to do within schools to change values of youngsters. So in the second part of what I'm going to be talking about today, I'll deal with that subject in general. But in this particular case, what I've been talking about, the reason I've spent another article on this is, first of all, they have a revised textbook, this Bible Literacy Project. And we'll get into that after the break.
And I think it's so important that people understand that our children's minds are under attack. If they can control their reality, destroy their faith in God, they can change America. Well, Dr. Cuddy, you pick the story up there right now.
Okay. The Bible Literacy Project I've mentioned in the past, and I've talked about their communitarian influence involved in a number of other things. And I'm not saying or intimating that these people who are doing this are a bunch of humanists who are trying to make all the little children atheists. But I am saying, whenever you deal with values in the schools, and we'll get to the humanism and so forth in a little bit, but this particular project, if you were going to reshape children's values, you need to appreciate no teacher is going to come into the classroom and say, okay, I want all of you youngsters to become humanist or atheist or whatever. So what you have to do is what Sidney Hook, who is a humanist, said. He said we will get them by indirection. In other words, there's not a frontal assault. I've mentioned, and Dr. Stan has mentioned many times in the past about Richard Gardner in the Council on Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs Journal article of 1974 by saying that there would be an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece. The same principle applies in education and how they would try to change youngsters' values. And as I said, we'll get to the humanism aspect in a little bit. But this particular thing is important because it's about the Bible. And a lot of parents at home are teaching their youngsters a traditional understanding of the Bible, the traditional beliefs, and so on. And the problem with this Bible literacy project is, unlike some others, other Bible curriculum, such as the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools, which seems to be fine to me and passes constitutional muster, this thing has a number of problems. Now, supposedly, they, in this revised edition, corrected these things. But I spent some time here, and I'll go through it, because they're trying to get into all the schools, not just public schools, but private Christian schools they can in the nation. They are heavily funded. They have a big PR machine office in New York and so on. And so what I'm going to do is I looked at the revised edition, and they say they revised it to change the misrepresentation and inaccurate reporting. I'm not real sure where they get this inaccurate reporting. For my own part, I generally quote from them directly. And they have made a number of corrections, although in their website they said there were no errors in the first edition. They have corrected the part about where they mistakenly said Jesus talked in parables so everyone could understand what he was saying, which is, of course, inaccurate. According to Matthew and Luke, Jesus spoke in parables to the general public that, quote, seeing they may not see and hearing they may not understand. But secondly...
Hold that thought, Dr. Kennedy. We'll be back here in just a moment as we bring our stations from across America right on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Kennedy is talking about the Bible as Literacy Project, which is trying to get its textbooks into schools across America. And, of course, this is basically a communitarian philosophy, doing away, certainly, with the God-centered education that once was the foundation of our society, one man under God. Now we get to this communitarian concepts, which is, of course, what communism is really made of. So pick the story up there as Dr. Cuddy begins to look into this thing that they've come up now. They've changed the textbooks, but they are still intent upon getting their textbooks into every school in America to use them to change the perception and the reality of our children. Go ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay. What you have is the a notion here in the Bible Literacy Project that they want to seek what they would call a common ground. And this is where the idea of communitarian comes from. And I've mentioned in the past about half of their original advisory board were communitarians, which cannot be by accident. If you were to try to get a broad sample of various religious affiliations, you wouldn't come up with half Presbyterian, for example, just by accident. So the idea that this is a communitarian effort seems fairly obvious. Now, I have a 30-year-old dictionary which actually says if you look up communitarian, it has just one word definition. It says communism. Today, I'm sure these people would not refer to themselves in that light, but still, there are a number of errors in here, which I'll get to. Some are rather simple errors that they still make. They will talk about the incarnation and redemption of Christ, and of course, Christ needed no redemption, so the phrase should be the incarnation of and redemption by Christ. They also have some other errors, such as they say, quote, that the sin of Adam was ultimately a blessing, end quote, and actually sin itself, of course, is not a blessing, so the phrase should have been that that resulted in the blessing of our redemption by Christ. So there are still a number of mistakes, although they don't want to really call them that. The problem is, even when they were informed of errors in their first volume, they continue to make, for example, talking about the book of Job, they said in the first edition, and now again, they still have this, they haven't changed it, they said the book of Job provides no clear-cut moral or answer to Job's situation. Well, the problem with that is, if any of your listeners have read the last chapter of Job, which is chapter 42, you cannot help but see the clear-cut moral. I mean, Job's situation literally turns around after he repents, that's in verse 6, and after he prays for his friends, and that's in verse 10. But it doesn't just leave it at that. On page 156 of this revised edition, it says something very interesting. Now remember, there are 41 some scholars, you know, going over this from the Wheaton College and all of these prestigious religious institutions. So you would think they would choose their words carefully. So here in this revised edition, it says the book of Job, quote, puts God on trial for the mysteries of human suffering, end quote. Well, that term, on trial, is really bothersome, because God doesn't have to plead his case before any man. The notion of putting God on trial actually implies that man is in a position to somehow judge the rightness or wrongness or fairness or unfairness of God's actions. But when you look at the concept of a trial, usually one is found either innocent or guilty of something, and man is in no position, in my opinion, to find God, quote, guilty, quote, of anything. So I have a real problem with them using that term, puts God on trial. That has to be some sort of deliberate effort on their part. Also, what you have is a continuation of this attitude and the way they ask things that tends to undermine traditional biblical beliefs. They've still got that problem. For example, in the teacher's edition, this new revised edition, it asks students to report on the similarities and differences between the flood in Genesis and floods that, quote, appear in the myths and folklore of many world cultures, end quote. Now, when they say that, a student might get the idea from that the flood in Genesis is part of a myth or folklore. I mean, why would they use that term? There's lots of real, historically provable floods in history. A flood's a flood, right? So why not just say, students, we want you to compare the real Genesis flood with other real, historically provable floods in history. Why do they have...
I think there's no question at all. There is evidence that the Genesis flood did occur. I mean, there's just so much evidence that a flood did occur about a little over 5,000 years ago.
Right.
It's recorded by many, many societies, and it's not a myth. I mean, it's a very scientifically provable fact. I mean, where did all the fossil layers come from? Did they just suddenly appear? There had to be something, that actually buried those fossils under piles and piles of sand and sediment that eventually turned into rock. I mean, this is the proof of the existence of the Genesis flood. And yet, of course, they're trying to make this out that this is, or at least raise the question in the child's mind that it's like the other mythical floods.
That's right. They would say, oh, sure, yeah, we understand Genesis flood's real. But then the question is, well, then just say compare the Genesis flood to other real floods. Why this comparison to cataclysmic floods that appear in the myths and folklore of other world cultures? It's that sort of, insidious undermining there. The next thing is, when they get to this notion of common ground that I referred to originally about the communitarian aspect of this, what you find is that they want this textbook, the title is The Bible and Its Influence, used in conjunction with a guide that they developed, they along with Charles Haynes's First Amendment Freedom Center, that's titled The Bible in Public Schools, The First Amendment Guide. Now, when you look at that guide, it has various endorsements. It's endorsed by the NEA, National Education Association, very left-wing group. and among others is endorsed by the Council on Islamic Education. Right there, you're puzzling, saying, well, why are they? I mean, the course is on the Bible. What's Islam got to do with this? And so what you find is that the teacher's edition refers to specifically Islam as a great religion, and it does not deal in any way with the reason that Ishmael was not part of the Abrahamic covenant. And so this new textbook, in fact, contains quite a lot about Islam, which is curious because, you know, the Bible was way before Islam was founded. So you've got to wonder why it's in there in the first place. And then you get to the teacher's edition, page 52, and it suggests when you're teaching about the Bible and Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar, it says here that the teacher, quote, may wish to explain that the traditional Islamic reading of this story incorporated in the Quran substitutes Ishmael for Isaac. Muslims see Ishmael as the oldest and the true successor to Abraham, end quote. In other words, what they're doing here is they're not just teaching a course on the Holy Bible. They're teaching, in addition, Islamic beliefs from the Quran. Now, why are they doing that in a course which is supposed to be about the Holy Bible? It all has to do with that sort of common ground that they're seeking. And so when you look at what their overarching philosophy is, in the teacher's edition, it advises, quote, the teacher needs to manifest respect for various faith traditions, Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, Evangelical, Orthodox, other world religions, or no formal faith tradition at all, end quote. Once again, if this is a course about the Bible, why do they care about other world religions and people with no formal faith tradition at all? It goes on. And the teacher's edition, it says, quote, each student should be willing to respect the opinions and positions of every other student, end quote. And it goes on and says that those people who prepared this textbook, the revised textbook, these 40-some scholars, quote, work together to accomplish an overview of the Bible that is fair to non-believers as well as believers, end quote. Now think about all those things. What you have in this country is, under freedom of religion, everybody has the right to whatever religious view they want, or to be an atheist or whatever it is. But that does not translate into the necessity of a child respecting an atheist position or view. In other words, let's say you're in a classroom. Make this very practical. And little Johnny stands up and he's a Christian youngster. And he says, Jesus said, and I believe, and my position is that Jesus is truthful when he says, quote, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me, end quote. That's John 14:6. All right, and then little Jimmy stands up, and he's the atheist child, and says, well, I think that's false. Jesus, you know, must have delusions of grandeur, or he's a liar. All right, why should Johnny, the little Christian child, respects the right of this fellow Jimmy to have whatever view he wants, but why should he be required to, quote, respect the opinion and position of that child itself? Why should he respect a false view, the atheist view that Jesus is deluded or a liar? He shouldn't. And so that shows this overarching attitude that these people have, this common ground. You know, we have to have the respect for other world religions, even if they believe that Jesus is not the Messiah, or that Jesus is lying or whatever, because it's non-believers as well. I mean, this includes atheists. It's not just that you should respect a little child who has Hindu beliefs. You should actually respect a child who stands up and says, it's a lie that there's a God. And I think that's totally unacceptable. They have the right to whatever the view they want, but you don't have to respect the view. For example, let's say a child stood up and said, George, well, we'll get to it after the break.
All right, fine, but what they're really trying to do is destroy the faith of the children. It's very obvious that they have an agenda, and that is why they're spending a tremendous amount of money to get this education into our schools, to undermine, to destroy the beliefs of our Christian children. Because, ladies and gentlemen, there is a conspiracy against God, well-financed, well-funded, by those who come from the other side. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, go ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay. What I was going to say is, let's say you stood up, had a student stand up in class and say, my position is that George Washington...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Literacy Project and their textbook, the revised textbook that's coming in the schools. I wanted to spend some time on that because that's something happening right now, a specific project that your listeners can look for. More broadly, there are other people who are trying to undermine the values of youngsters, and they go by various names, and I'm backing up to just before the first Humanist Manifesto to show what their plan has been. This is not something accidental. One fellow is Charles Francis Potter, and he signed the first Humanist Manifesto in 1933. And before that, several years before that, 1930, he authored a book called Humanism, A New Religion. And he said in there, quote, "Education is thus a most powerful ally of humanism. What can the theistic Sunday schools, meeting for an hour once a week and teaching only a fraction of the children, do to stem the tide of a five-day program of humanistic teaching?" So here you see, right off the bat, they know that the public schools are very, very important, a powerful ally of humanism, and they'll have them 5 days a week because they're required. Most states require the youngsters to go to school, you know, 5 days a week. And so if they can slip in their values there, then they can undo what the, as he calls it, theistic Sunday schools are doing just 1 day a week. And so what you have is a, it goes by various names, but in this case, humanism. And what you find is that what they are trying to do, these people, is build a, I guess you would call it a new social order. In fact, a couple of years after his book, there was another book by George Counts, one of these progressive educators, in 1932, and it's actually called Dare the Schools Build a New Social Order. And he said that the teachers should deliberately reach for power and then make the most of their conquest so that they could, quote, influence the social attitudes, ideals, and behavior of the coming generation. He's continuing, "Our major concern consequently should be to make certain that every progressive school will use whatever power it may possess in opposing and checking the forces of social conservatism and reaction." And he goes on about the growth of science and so forth has carried us forward, and it has replaced knowledge, competition by cooperation, and they have replaced, these are his words, they have replaced trust in providence by careful planning. In other words, God's out and their planning, their societal planning comes in, and private capitalism is going to be replaced, he said, by some kind of socialized economy. He goes on, "Capitalism's days are numbered. It will have to be displaced altogether or changed so radically that its identity will be completely lost. A planned, coordinated, and socialized economy would involve severe restrictions on personal freedom. If property rights are to be diffused in an industrial society, natural resources and all important forms of capital will have to be collectively owned," end quote. This is 1932. This is not some obscure fellow. George Counts was one of the leading progressive educators of his day. And so this is a long-range plan. If you think the schools are a mess today, if you think they're messing up your child's mind, it's not by accident. Long-range plan. 2 years after that, John Dewey, the father of progressive education, comes out with his book, A Common Faith. And this relates specifically to what I was saying earlier about common ground. Very, very similar. What Dewey says in there is that he says, quote, "It is impossible to ignore the fact that historic Christianity has been committed to a separation of sheep and goats, the saved and the lost, the elect and the mass. Those outside of the fold of the church and those who do not rely upon belief in supernatural in the supernatural, have been regarded as only potential brothers still requiring adoption into the family. I cannot understand how any realization of the democratic ideal as a vital moral and spiritual ideal in human affairs is possible without surrender of the conception of the basic division to which supernatural Christianity is committed," end quote. In other words, you with dogmatic traditional beliefs will have to surrender them. We need a common faith, what we can all agree on.
And, of course, this has always been this idea of democracy, but their idea of democracy is entirely different than most people. They really want a platonic state with an all-powerful ruler and then a ruling oligarchy and then everybody else subject to the state. They call that democracy. But, of course, you know what? When you are able to have enough money to bribe the rulers, why, you can control that democracy. And unfortunately, that's exactly what's going on today. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy to evaluate this Bible Literacy Project even more. Well, Dr. Cuddy, you want to pick up? You were just, I think you were reading from John Dewey, that man who was so intent upon dumbing down our children, bringing over this other look-see type of reading intentionally, preventing our children from learning phonics. And, of course, we see the end result today with here in California, where I live, an educational system in crisis. And they just say, what are we going to do? We keep investing more and more and more and more money, and nothing helps. And this is what Arnold Schwarzenegger has said. I know, and one of the few things I agree with him, no amount of money is going to help our educational system. We've got to make fundamental changes. Well, those changes really came in with John Dewey. He set out to destroy our educational system, to dumb down our people, and to destroy their faith in God.
That's right. Dewey was the father of progressive education. A lot of teachers today will call themselves progressive educators. And Dewey had, I mentioned it, I'll just mention passing, a couple of years before Potter wrote his book, Charles Francis Potter, I mentioned Dewey went over to the Soviet Union. And he loved it over there. He came back in the December 5, 1928 issue of the New Republic magazine and wrote up how great it was. He said the Bolsheviks are wonderful. They're keeping tabs on people. They're undermining the traditional church and family. This is a wonderful experiment, he thought. And so he was invited over there to help them. You know, the Soviets said, well, we've got to get this guy over here. And then they found out he was, you know, doing his Dick and Jane Basil Reader look-say, and they kicked him out finally because even the Soviets knew what didn't work. And so...
Of course, we've never learned that the look-say method of reading doesn't work. And that's why it's being used here all across America to dumb down our children. And that's one of the reasons why our kids really are not competitive with children from other countries throughout the world, because we've intentionally dumbed them down. That and the other things we've, terrible things we've done to their minds.
Right. The there's always sort of a pitch that they make that that sounds pretty good. The thing about the Dick and Jane Basil reading series, or began around 1930, you know, look, see, spot, run, that sort of thing, is that the child's mind is capable of memorizing fairly easily about 5,000 words. So most youngsters look like they're learning to read when they, you know, see Spot run, they see the dog whose name is Spot, you know, like that. The problem is, once you get beyond that sort of 5,000, you may think 5,000 words is a lot, but it's really not. It's a very minimal amount of words. What they need to do is have the phonetic sound symbol relationship. That allows them to go beyond, say, the first or second grade to read more complicated words.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And we were just talking about this look-say method of teaching children to read that had been introduced by John Dewey. And, of course, he knew the system would not work. In other words, you couldn't teach children to read by a look-see method and Jane and this whole thing. You had to, you needed phonics. Phonics would allow the child to be able to sound out the word, to be able to spell the word, to be able to read the word, to be able to read it effectively and understand its meaning. Look-see, you look at the word and it looks like something, and it may not be that word at all, but when you look at it, you don't sound it out. You don't try to figure out it in your mind. And they've done irreparable harm to the minds of our children, and they've been doing it for the better part of 100 years. They knew it would destroy our educational system. That's why the Soviets refused to utilize it. They tried it. They knew it didn't work, and why we've kept it up here all across America. Our private schools, of course, do use phonics. Our public schools use the look-see method of teaching reading, and look and see how poorly our children do when compared with children from other nations after they graduate from high school, and why so many of our children have to take remedial reading and certainly remedial English when they get to college, because they've been deliberately dumbed down. It didn't happen by accident. They knew what they were doing.
No, that's absolutely right. Same things happen in math and some other things, but reading is the key, because if you're able to read, then you can get into all sorts of fields, whatever interests you, you know, engineering and complicated problems and analytical thought and so on. But the ability to read is critically important, so you'll have a lot of youngsters And they can, you know, under look say, they can say, okay, C-A-T, cat, I see the cat, cat, you know, cat, is how they would sound it out. But the problem is they just memorized, you know, these three letters, and that means cat, and they see the picture of the cat. When you get to complicated words, what phonics allows you to do is read, whether it's one syllable, two, three, four, five, you know, whatever it is, you can sound out the word. You have the sound and symbol, the symbol being the letters, consonants, vowels, relationship. So you're able to read whatever it is in front of you. A lot of youngsters 200 years ago could read the Bible. The Bible has a lot of complicated words in it. And the reason they could do that is because they learned phonetically, phonics, the sound, symbol, relationship between the sound you make and the consonants and vowels in conjunction with each other. And so the Deweyites sort of cleverly were undermining that. I remember Dewey's mentor was a G. Stanley Hall. He was actually the first Ph.D. of Wilhelm Wundt of the Leipzig School, and that's a real trip right there. But anyway, G. Stanley Hall actually wrote an article once saying, you know, children shouldn't be able to read too much. You know, it's eye strain. We want to prevent their eye strain. And so they were doing all sorts of things to try and play down the ability to read. But early on, many, many people, these were not, you know, well-off people. These were not, you know, just the rich people. You'd have out there on the plains as they moved west, these, you know, poor little dirt farmers' children in bare feet. They could read. They would read the Bible. And as I said, the Bible has some complicated words because they learned phonetically. And so, you know, if you're going to undermine education, you certainly don't want the youngsters to be able to read. And so what you had with the Deweys, Dewey was 1928, he loved it, and Bolshevism, and so on. And so, pardon, what they did was he got himself in very well with Columbia Teachers College in New York. And by the early 50s, Columbia was putting out about a third of all the superintendents and principals of the major city populations of the country. And so from there, you know, if you're a superintendent principal, you can pretty well say what's going to be in the schools. So you can choose your teachers and so on. And so Dewey had a tremendous influence there. He was also at the University of Chicago a while. And his proteges, you know, people like Counts and Kirkpatrick and some others would do the same thing. And they were really interested in reshaping society. Dewey, the next year after 1928, 1929, wrote a book called Individualism Old and New, in which he said, look, you know, we're going to have socialism. That's it. We're going to have socialism. You may call it liberalism, but it's going to be socialism. Because they were trying for that. George Counts in the 30s, you know, I just read his quote about collectivism, and so they were enamored with what was going on in the Soviet Union. You know, this is a great experiment and so on. And so the schools were a tremendous part of that. And values, of course, were important. You had, after the Second World War, Brock Chisholm, a Canadian psychiatrist, became first head of the World Health Organization. And in there, he was talking about values in an article he did in, I think it was February 1946, the journal Psychiatry, where he said, you know, this concept that parents are putting in there of right and wrong, this is bad. This is bad. We got to do with these concepts such as right and wrong. That we have to, that's inhibiting the poor child. You know, we just can't have that. We have to do away with that. And so you had this sort of internationalism in the schools, an international perspective that they were trying to engender. And, of course, whenever you talk about internationalism, you're talking about UNESCO. That's their primary education arm. A lot of things that we have today aren't just, you know, popping up in your own hometown out of nowhere. Some of them are driven by international concerns. So what they wanted to do internationally was have this world government. And we talked about that in the past, but just give this one example. In the late 40s, UNESCO started put out this series, you know, about 9 or 10 volumes of this stuff called Towards World Understanding. For example, in volume 1, it says that children should be taught, quote, those qualities of citizenship which provide the foundation upon which international government must be based if it is to succeed. And then you go to volume 5 and it says, the kindergarten has a significant part to play in the child's education. Not only can it correct many of the errors of home training, it can prepare the child for membership in the world society. The success of the teacher in bringing his pupils to bringing up his pupils to be good citizens of the world. As long as the child breathes the poisoned air of nationalism, education and world-mindedness can produce only precarious results. For the moment, it is sufficient to note that it is most frequently in the family that the children are infected with nationalism by hearing what is national extolled and what is foreign disparaged. The activity of the school cannot bring about the desired result unless repudiating every form of nationalism may usher in the revolution, end quote. And so what you find here is an undermining of the family. The family isn't teaching the child correctly. They're teaching him to be patriotic to his nation. And they use those terms like infected and so forth. So what you have is an international undermining as well as what's going on in this nation. And this carries on through the 50s. And so you get into the early 60s, and you have various efforts. The National Education Association has something called, co-founded the National Training Labs, and by the early 60s they put out something called Issues in Human Relations Training that says what they're about. The sensitivity training is actually, quote, brainwashing. They use that term. And so by the early 60s you have Dewey's influence through the superintendents and principals down to the classroom level. And so at the classroom level, they switch from the cognitive, that's your reading, writing, basic math, you know, the basics, to the affective domain, which are your social relationships and feelings. See, if you're going to create a socialist society, you have to change the emphasis to, you know, instead of you are able to compute, you know, and read and so forth, the traditional knowledge of history and so on. You want to have this change in attitude to emphasize how you get along in society, because that's, you know, that's the tact of socialism. And so what you found then is the courts start to get involved. They kick God out, kick school prayer out, but they still teach values. See, that's the key. I think that's 40 years ago is where we, I mean, Christians and Christian leaders and religious leaders sort of failed. We moaned and groaned, you know, when the Bible and school prayer was kicked out, which is fine. I mean, it's fine to do that. But what we should have done was said, wait, hold the fort here, hold the fort. You're still going to teach values? And the schools would say, well, yeah. And they should have said, well, I thought you said the government should remain neutral. You know, separation of church and state, government neutrality. If you guys in the public schools are still going to teach values, and if you're going to say God or the Bible cannot be the moral authority for teaching those values, then you've got some other moral authority, and that's not neutrality. So for 40 years, we've allowed the government schools to pound our youngsters with a value system that has a different moral authority than we're teaching them at home. And we're still doing that. I don't understand for the life of me why our religious leaders and others don't yell from the rooftops about that. But it's still going on, and that's why you have a good deal of the mess we have in schools today.
I'm sure you're absolutely right. And, Chris, it doesn't sound to me like the Bible Literacy Project is going to solve that problem, not in the least bit, because it's going to undermine the child's faith in the validity of the Scriptures.
It does not present the teacher, who could be an atheist. I mean, there's no requirement that this be a Christian teacher in front of the room. The teacher is not allowed under this type of teaching to say, with Johnny, the little Christian child gets up, say, yes, you're absolutely right, Johnny. They can't do that, because right beside him may be a little Islamic child who gets up and says, well, I don't think that. So the very attitude of the teacher, the authority figure for the classroom, not confirming what little Johnny says, totally undermines the traditional concept Christians have of the Bible, that is the truth. It's not an opinion, it's the truth. And so this is a very dangerous undermining, I think. And we have, as I said, there are people in the humanist movement in the early 70s, Sidney Hook, who said, we'll get them by indirection. And like I said, they don't come in and say, okay, Johnny, you must become an atheist. But what they'll do is they'll teach, let's say, evolution, right? If they can get the child to believe in evolution, then if man is simply, you know, a large ape, then anything pretty much goes. I mean, infanticide, sure. What's wrong with that? Euthanasia, eugenics, why not? Because man's just an animal. And so what they do is they always portray that particular struggle as, well, you're interjecting religion in the schools, or creation, or God, and that's religion. You can't. What they don't want you to do is say, we're going to teach the scientific evidence for and against evolution, which you would do with any theory. I mean, theory of relativity, you always give the evidence, well, here's the evidence for, here's the evidence against. But they are deathly afraid that that's what the people will start demanding. We want the scientific evidence. If you're going to have it for evolution, we want the scientific evidence against evolution, just like you do for any other theory, because they understand that once you start asking those questions, sort of saying, how did the eyes or DNA just happen to evolve? I mean, we don't open up the back of the watch and say, my, look at that complicated structure. I guess that's what happened when a big wind blew through a scrap metal pile. You know, it just doesn't make logical sense. But they don't want you to do that. They don't want you to question that. So that's what he meant by indirection. In fact, another humanist actually wrote that in an article in the Humanist magazine. He said that we are pounding youngsters with the belief that Adam and Eve were just a myth. I'm trying to remember his name, but he's a Blanchard. Blanchard was his name. He's another humanist, and he wrote that in the Humanist magazine, how they were going to use the schools. And then in the early 80s, they actually gave a prize. The Humanist magazine gave a prize to a John Dunphy, who said he said that what we were having here is a battle between the rotting corpse of Christianity and humanism, and humanism was going to be triumphant in the schools. And so they know exactly what they're doing. One of the founders of the 4 million member International Humanist and Ethical Union indicated that conspiratorial than any attempt to overthrow a government, is the way his name was H.J. Blackham. He said what they're doing in the schools, changing the values, children's opinions, is more conspiratorial than any decision to overthrow a government. So they know exactly what they're doing, and they're trying to create this new generation of people who, through values clarification, actually believe in situation ethics. And that's why just a few years ago, the Josephson Institute of Ethics took a survey of about 20,000 teenagers and found that not only had they, about 75% of them had lied a couple of times in the past year, but about 47% had stolen something from a store. So that means wherever you are, if you're in Oklahoma, if you're in Monterey, California, wherever you are, if you see two teenagers walking towards you, chances are really good one of them stolen something. If you ask that teen, why did you do that? And if he actually told you, he'd probably say, oh, no, the schools don't tell me to go steal. But most of the time I don't steal, cheat, or lie. However, in this situation, it was okay to steal, to shoplift from that store, because last week I bought a sweater and the shop owner charged me what I thought was too much, so I figured he owed me one. That is the new value system in this nation. That's the value system of this younger generation, which is going to be in the majority, if not already, very soon. You will start to find attitudes change. You'll start to find laws that are more, let's say, euthanasia friendly. You'll find all sorts of changes in this society, which are definitely not the values of the traditional Christian believers in the Bible. And so I'm not saying that the people who have this Bible Literacy Project support all of that. That's sort of a separate issue. But what I am saying is when they have in their textbook these concepts that call into question the traditional view of the Bible, when they say that a Christian child should actually respect the view of somebody who believes in Islam or who is an atheist or whatever, that's going too far. And I really think it's time for Christians to stand up and say, look, the Bible is the truth. This is about ultimate truth. If you can't teach the Bible as the truth, then you shouldn't have this at all.
Well, I certainly think that we're in real trouble, and I don't think that the average parent has any idea what's going on in our schools, or that there are people who have a different worldview. And this is really what it's all about. These people believe in an authoritarian system of government. That's what socialism is all about. You either have the individual who's free under God, and of course under God's direction, or you have a people who do not believe in God, and then they have to have an authoritarian system over them, with the intellectual elite controlling them. But you see, it really doesn't make sense unless there's some other spiritual force really that is directing this whole move to destroy the the religious, the Christian foundation of our country. Would you believe? Would you agree with that, Dr. Cuddy?
Sure. You've often said there's a spiritual battle going on. And in case, you know, I've referred to people many, many years ago, and you may say, okay, John Dewey, but that's not going on now. After the break, I'll give just one more quote that shows you about today and a leader in education, what he says they're doing today.
And, of course, the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, that what is going on you're never going to hear discussed on, well, on most of our major radio or television programs. You're certainly not going to hear it discussed, you know, from our pulpits. Unfortunately, most of our ministers don't want to talk about things like that because they're controversial, and of course, some people might get angry and might even leave the church. There might be teachers you wouldn't want to offend anybody. And yet, of course, we're not willing to offend people. How can we stand up for righteousness? Dr. Cuddy, thank you so very much. We'll be right back. Well, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up tonight's program.
Okay. In case your listeners say, okay, John Dewey, you know, 80, 90 years ago, sure, but things are different in my place. Well, this is Ted Sizer. Now, he's writing this in 1970, but Ted Sizer is a big name then and now. I think he's at Brown University. I think the head of Reader's Digest gave him some like $50 million for some sort of center. Now, this is what Sizer, an educational leader today, wrote in his book, Five Lectures on Moral Education. He says, quote, the 19th century teacher sermonized, but Christian sermonizing denies individual autonomy, which with justice lies at the heart of a new morality. No longer can we list objective moral truths about the world and expect children to take them over intact. Moral autonomy, the independent arrival at a conviction of one's own accountability towards one's fellow man, the rational and emotional acceptance of justice as the most proper atmosphere in which all individuals can flourish, including even one's secret self. This is the new morality towards which we are to guide ourselves and other people. Clearly, the strict adherence to a code is out of date. In other words, this is humanistic, values education process to have situation ethics. It is the guiding force in education today. If you go into a classroom and they say, well, we're teaching honesty, you better ask what kind of honesty. Is it humanistic honesty or is it biblical honesty? Because there's a big difference. And I'm telling you, they are changing your child's values in the public schools, and we need as a group to stand up against this. It's been going on 40 years, and a lot of the problems we have in our nation today are directly responsible for that. That's why I spend so much time on a topic such as education.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you do, and I would recommend to all of our listeners that they go to newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com, and pull down Dr. Cuddy's articles that are posted there. You'll find there a great wealth of education, a great wealth of information. You need to have it, and of course, it's all carefully documented, so you can actually check to make sure it's all right. I guarantee if Dr. Cuddy's written it, that's why he has the documentation.
And the 200-year chronology which you offer.
And the 200-year chronology on education and the path to the New World Order. What's the official title?
Well, it's called Chronology of Education with Quotable Quotes, and it has about a 3,000-item index, so you can look up whatever you want.
All right, fine. God bless. Thanks very much for being with us, Dennis. Dennis, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. And first, it's always a pleasure to have Dr. Dennis Cuddy with us. It's almost a witching hour back east, so we'll have to let him go. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Cuddy. And once again, you will find his articles at newswithviews.com. If you'd like his Chronology of Education, why, it's available from Radio Liberty. I think it's got something like 3,000 quotable quotes in the source of the documentation. And, of course, much of what we've covered tonight is there. That's the Chronology of Education. It's available from Radio Liberty. We carry Dr. Cuddy's book, Cover Up. We still have a few copies of that. We carry his book, Mental Health Screening, The Road to Socialism, Conspiracy, which is a little short pamphlet. But he's a wonderful source of information. I feel it a real pleasure to consider Dennis a very close friend. Hardly a day goes by when we don't confer back and forth one way or the other. Although I've never met him, he's as close to me as, I have one or two very close friends I get a chance to see, but Dennis is a good friend. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you need to understand what's really going on today. America is under attack. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand the spiritual forces, you really need to get that. And then, of course, if I could suggest, the four-tape set on the supernatural, the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. The book written by Constance Cumby, which is entitled The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, and Constance, writing some 25 years ago, really redirected my whole line of thought to an understanding of the other dimension that is not imaginary, it's real, and it is there, and there are certain people who tap into that supernatural power. It transforms their lives, but of course they are leaving themselves open to demonic possession, and there really are people today, ladies and gentlemen, who are demonically possessed. If you've not read Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, or heard our four-tape set, which we put together before Father Martin passed away, entitled The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and you'd like to know more about these items we're talking about, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. If you're concerned about what's happening as far as emergency situations, because believe me, we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis, if you'd like an emergency food catalog or a health products catalog, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. We'd be glad to send them to you, because we think it's vitally important that our listeners at least begin making preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead. Now, if you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, my January newsletter dealt with the Fitzgerald Report, which you probably never heard of. In fact, I never heard of it until recently when one of my subscribers, a member of the Radio Liberty family, had written to me and asked me if I would find the Fitzgerald Report, because it had been inserted in the Congressional Record in 1953 and was very, very well known. And I went up on the Internet, and it was very well known. Everybody was writing about it, but nobody had ever seen a copy. Went to the National Health Federation, certainly the leading conservative organization that deals with health and health products, and they told me they'd tried for years to get the Fitzgerald Report. So fortunately, Dr. Cuddy was able to find it for me in the Congressional Record back in August of 1953. Although many libraries had actually refused to give my friend, the gentleman who had written to me initially, a copy. He couldn't get a copy from any of the major libraries, but Dr. Cuddy was able to get it from the university library back there in North Carolina. And that's just included with our January newsletter. And we go into the background of active efforts to suppress effective treatments for cancer. Why would anybody do that? I mean, cancer's a terrible plague. You mean to tell me that somebody would suppress effective treatments for cancer? Yes, ladies and gentlemen. The number one researcher at the National Cancer Institute, Dean Burke, personally told me that was the case. Oh, well, we're out of time. If you'd like the free copy, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening, for this hour, we're not going to have a guest unless it's you out there in the listening audience who's calling us. If you have something you'd like to talk about, our number is 1-800-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. But I'm going to be talking, well, I'm going to be talking about lots of things that really, I think, should be of concern to everyone. If you're reading the Internet, you'll find out that the bees are disappearing. Now, in many areas, up to 90% of the bee hives are just decimated. They're gone. The bees fly off and they never return, and the beekeepers don't know what to do. The bees are such an important part of our ecology, and certainly many of the crops, like the almonds here in California, largest almond producers in the world, and they've got a week to pollinate when the blossoms are out, and they're wondering if they're going to be able to get the bees to be able to do that. Many of the beekeepers in certain parts of the nation are totally decimated and going out of business because their bees' hives are empty, and they don't know why. Nobody knows why the bees are not returning to the hive, laden down with honey as they have since the beginning of time. Some people have suggested it might be the genetically modified foods that they're, and of course there are certain things in those genetically modified foods that could affect the memory of the bee. He doesn't know where his hive is and he can't find it again. And then there are others that are suggesting that maybe it's some of the new pesticides or combinations of the pesticides, and the Environmental Protection Agency has been warned about this, but the people of the Environmental Protection Agency have another agenda. And that is a very, very deadly agenda. And if you doubt that, I hope that many of you out there, and this is on a different subject, but it has to do with the Environmental Protection Agency, if you go to the website of the lawyers, the scientists, and the engineers who work at for the Environmental Agency, a website that represents the 11 unions that represent those people, and it is NTEU280.org. That's National Treasury Employees Union 280.org, NTEU280.org. And read their website on water fluoridation. You'll find that the letters they've written to Congress, the letters they've written to the EPA, the letters they've tried to get into the newspaper, the testimony before Congress saying that the EPA is poisoning the American people with water fluoridation. And, of course, we hope you'll go there. Challenges, try to prove us wrong, NTEU280.org, and find out, of course, that they are poisoning the American people. Those of you, but I want you to go www.NTEU280.org. Get that and start getting people reading that. Recently, last week, we had Dr. Conant, Paul Conant, as a guest, and he was talking about the effort to poison the American people with fluoride, and of course, what Divas DuPont has actually got permission from the Environmental Protection Agency to fumigate dried eggs. Now, whether dried eggs are it has anything to do with what we're seeing with the pet food that is killing pets, almost one in six of the pets who have been fed some questionable food have died, dogs and cats, and this is on the front page of many of our newspapers, but Dr. Conant told me just last week that he has been trying for a year to do something about what the EPA has done. They've allowed DuPont to fumigate dried eggs that are used in products all across America with a fluoride compound that leaves a residual of 960 parts of a fluoridated compound per million. Now, that doesn't sound like a little bit, but in your toothpaste, you have 1,000 parts per million there in the residual. And if you read the toothpaste tube, why, you'll notice that it tells you if you swallow this, or if a child were to swallow, you know, more than a little pea-shaped bit, you should immediately go to the poison control center for treatment. So certainly 1,000 parts per million of the fluoride in the toothpaste is considered a poison, but 960 parts per million in your dried eggs. And those dried eggs are put in everything. Now, they've been doing this for over a year. And the fact you've never heard of this simply reflects the degree of control that exists today of what the American people think. And if a little dab is dangerous, why, when you're eating, for instance, dried eggs that have been constituted, you know, and you may eat 3 or 4 eggs, why isn't that dangerous to your health? And the thing it is, and Dr. Cotter, who's a chemist by trade and has given up his appointment at a major university to try to educate the people about the danger of fluoridation, and you'll find his website at fluoridealert.org. Now, if you don't believe there's a conspiracy out there, you simply go to fluoridealert.net and fluoridealert.com, and you'll find out that those websites have been taken over by the American Dental Association. In other words, what they've done is surround his website, which is fluoridealert.org, so that you probably are going to have difficulty remembering a lot of what's said. And so you go to their website, and what do they tell you? How wonderful fluoride is. It's a deadly poison. You use it in rat poison. You use it in insecticides. You know, you use it in bactericides. It's one of the most deadly poisons we know. So why are they putting it in the water? Why are they putting it in the dried eggs? And, of course, if the EPA allows that to happen, what has the EPA allowed to happen as far as the bees are concerned? And if we don't have bees, we'll lose a third of our agricultural products. In other words, you're so dependent upon the bees to pollinate our products. And if we don't have the bees, how are we going to pollinate? This doesn't make sense. And there are lots of things out there that don't make sense. Suddenly the pet foods are killing our pets. And all shucks, although their latest studies show that I think it's 1 in 6 of pets who ate the contaminated food, they have no idea what's killing them. But one of these days we're going to find out. But what happens if it'll kill the pets? What can it do to human beings? All the prepared foods we brought by today. We'll be back in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we were going to talk about population control, but we've got Paul calling from Florida, and this is Open Line, so we will welcome your calls at 1-800-259-5791. And Paul, did you have a question or comment? Paul, do you have a question or comment?
Open Line's Wendy,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Do you have a question or comment?
I just wanted to say they've got all the camps built now. I guess that they'll start hauling people to them as they flame out monetarily.
Well, I think that we can't say that, but we do know that we should be concerned because, of course, they have given $385 million to Halliburton, and they are refurbishing the old Japanese concentration camps. And we do know that there are all the camps there. They're all sitting empty. I think that we should, of course, encourage people to check out and find out if there really are these camps, if they're here. Why did they build them? Why are they keeping them ready? And who are they planning on putting in them?
I went to Manzar in 1998 when they had the grade stakes set up and they were doing surveying and everything. And the tarmac's right across the highway from the camp. The original chow hall, it's a huge thing from World War II, is still there. And it looked like they were getting ready to rejuvenate everything there.
No, whereabouts was this, Paul?
I'm talking about Manzanar. It's north of Lone Pine, about a couple of miles.
Now, what state is that in?
California.
Okay, fine. Well, we do know that...
We're not talking Tule Lake. I'm just talking Manzanar. That's
all right, fine. I'm not acquainted with that one, but I'm sure that I do know that there are camps out there. And they've changed the barbed wire from being there to keep the people out of the camp now to keep them into the camp, and we have to wonder what they have in mind.
Well, I know that when we left, Los Angeles, they had 40,000, they said, complete family units out on the street in Orange County and Los Angeles County, and now they can't seem to be found, and I don't know, nobody knows where they went. I'm sure they've got relatives, maybe they went there. But 40,000 complete family units is a lot of people.
Now, what are you talking about, 40,000 complete family units?
This is the husband, wife.
You're suggesting that they're already arresting people and making them disappear?
Well, I'm just wondering where they went.
I don't know.
Maybe they went to relatives or something.
Maybe they did. Well, yeah. that would be far better to... But we really shouldn't make statements we can't back up. In other words, people are moving all the time out of Orange County. They're moving all the time out of the city I'm living in. I'm sure they're moving out of your community. If there were really people were disappearing, large numbers of people in complete family units, we would certainly hear about that.
You know, it seems like that I can't get Alex Jones on the radio anymore. Every station that he's on is jammed.
I really can't comment on Alex. Alex does a good job, and I hope there's no organized effort to get him off the air. Anything else you want to say, Paul?
You got the winning numbers?
Winning numbers for what?
The lottery.
All right. No, I don't. Thanks very much for calling. And we simply would point out that we actually do carry a four-tape set on concentration camps, interviews with various people who have information on them. We have some videos. We have an excellent video. It's called The Amazing Clips, and at least part of that is a series of sequence of talks. One of them is, of course, the Iran-Contra hearings. And there you'll actually see at the Iran-Contra hearing when Congressman Jack Brooks of Texas is trying to question Ollie North, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, about a project he was involved in the Reagan administration, by which they were going to suspend the Constitution. And Congressman Jack Brooks keeps asking Oliver North about this project he was in, where they were going to suspend the Constitution and begin arresting American people in case of a national emergency. And, you know, and of course, Senator Inouye, Senator from Hawaii, keeps interrupting Congressman Brooks and said, well, we shouldn't bring about this. We should not talk about this in open session. Well, if you want to ask this question, why do we wait until we get into closed session? And then, of course, the next sequence is where Congressman Henry Gonzalez, a longtime congressman from head of the House Banking Committee, says, you know, the only person who really got close to the real issue was Congressman Jack Brooks, because there really is the plan, in case of a national emergency, to suspend the Constitution and round people up and put them into detention camps. Now, that's Congressman Henry Gonzalez. You'll actually see that sequence in The Amazing Clips. And if you'd like to know more about that, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And The Amazing Clips are either available by themselves or as part of something we call the Concentration Camp Special. We think it's vitally important that people get the information and find out what is really going on, because there really are people who have a different worldview. Now, we've put together a four-tape set on the Military Commission Act, and certainly the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act allows the president, in case of a national emergency, and that would be any time he wants to declare martial law, and this would be for an epidemic or civil unrest or some sort of a terrorist attack or even a natural disaster, to actually declare nationwide martial law and begin to round people up and put them into detention camps for their own protection. And even Liberal Senator Patrick Leahy has said that, you know, the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act encourages the president to declare martial law and begin rounding up people. I mean, even some of the liberal senators are concerned about this, and you should be as well. The question is, what do they know that we do not know? And I would simply point that, talking recently to a gentleman who deals with the dehydrated food and other foods of that sort and preparedness, He told me that maybe 4 to 6 months ago, there was a lot of food that the Army had sold. It was the various types of canned meats, freeze-dried meat, and other products that the government had sold and were being held by people who over there were marketing it to the public. And suddenly the government intervened and bought it back at a higher price than they'd sold it for, bought it back from these dealers. Massive amounts. We're talking about enough to really be stocking all sorts of underground shelters for the elite. And so that really none of this now is available. These were certain dehydrated meats, and we're going to have the freeze-dried guy, that's what he calls himself, on here to tell you that story, which he had told me. And we've had the same story confirmed from other sources. So I believe that the people in positions of power know that something big is coming down. When is it coming down? I don't know. But I know that all the preparations are being made to protect them, and no preparations are being made to protect us. We've got Jeff calling from Denver. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm actually calling you from Billings, Montana tonight.
All right, fine.
Yeah, you ever been here? It's beautiful.
No, let's see. Billings, Montana. Yes, I think I was there one time. What's the relationship between Billings and the Bitterroot Valley? No, I guess that's Hamilton is in the Bitterroot Valley.
Right, right. What's the relationship of that? I couldn't
Doesn't really matter. Go ahead, tell me.
Now, here's my question. I have not verified this, but I heard that if you take a bunch of rabbits and you set them off in a field that's full of normal crops and genetically modified crops, they will skip the genetically modified crops and eat only the organic ones.
Well,
have you heard anything to that effect?
Well, I have not heard anything about rabbits, but I have heard about rats. And on several occasions, we've heard that some of these genetically modified crops, like the soybeans or the, genetically modified soy, and cottonseed oil and corn, and there's one other that they genetically modify, and at least those that they could make a food out of for the rats wouldn't touch it. So I think that I don't know about the rabbits, but the rats are smart enough. They're a lot smarter than the American people, but then the American people don't realize what they're doing, adulterating our food and changing the very genetic makeup of it and putting insecticides into every kernel of corn that's eaten.
Well, we understand now the rats have not been exposed to the mainstream media.
Right.
So that may play a large role in that.
Right.
You know what really disturbs me, I'll just get your comment off the air, is what kind of mind of somebody does it take to genetically modify, put fluoride in the water, to poison an entire population, including children? What type of mind does something like that? It's difficult for me to get to sleep after digesting that kind of information at this hour.
Well, I'll tell you what, we often use this quotation from Elie Wiesel. And, of course, he writes about what happened at the concentration camps in Hitler's Germany and about the people who ran those concentration camps. And he very often, of course, would point it out that these were apparently normal people. I mean, they were, many of them had educations, had college educations. Some of them were doctors and lawyers and even theologians. But they saw nothing wrong with experimenting on human beings. They saw nothing wrong with the terrible and macabre things that were done in the German concentration camps, because these people have a different worldview. And, of course, they consider themselves an elite. They're not answerable to God, and is it unfortunately why the people who are doing these things really do not see anything wrong with these macabre experiments? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-249-5791. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were really talking about some of the macabre things that are going on today. And, you know, Jeff was calling from Denver. He was up in Billings, Montana. He wants to understand why these people would try to modify our foods. And of course, as you know, they put things, certainly into the corn. This is actually an insecticide. It's found in soil. It kills caterpillars. And it used to be that they would actually use this as a spray on the corn, but they found even a better idea. They insert it into the genetic makeup so it's not simply sprayed onto the leaves so it'll kill the caterpillar. It's in every kernel of the corn that you are going to eat and in every leaf that's produced. And so that there's no way that you can escape it, and you do not know that it's there. And the scientific studies have shown some very, very strange changes and alterations in the animals this was given to, and yet, of course, it has been released on the American people, and about 70% of the corn that you eat today is genetically modified, and it either is certainly a insecticide resistance or pesticide resistance, and I'm really very, very concerned about this, and I think you should be as well. They're adding to our milk. Most of our milk is made with cows that have been subjected to a growth hormone, and of course they call it the recombinant growth hormone that is being used. And there is a real problem with what they're doing. They're modifying the food that we're eating, and they're not allowing you to know that. Over in Europe, the people will not allow this. They're objecting, and of course any genetically modified food has to be labeled, but not here in the free United States. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz on Open Line Wednesday. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Ray.
Good evening. Doing? Good evening, Dr. Stan. I just had a few things. I wanted to discuss the World Future Society, and I believe that they're having an effect on education. I think that's one of their primary goals, is to affect education in America too. They want to get people involved in the teaching in New World, what they call about the New World Order and New Age philosophies.
All right, now what do you know about the World Future Society?
Well, Barbara Marx Hubbard, and I guess Marie Strong, and some of these other
Don't forget it was Robert McNamara, man who sent our boys off to fight and bleed and suffer and die in Vietnam, but never to win, just to bleed and suffer and die. Robert McNamara, Barbara Marx Hubbard, and Marie Strong are certainly all of the board of directors of this organization that up until recently their logo was a circle made up of three sixes, six, six, six. So go ahead, Ray, what were we going to say?
Well, They call Barbara Marx Hubbard the new Buckminster Fuller.
That's right.
And Buckminster Fuller was a rather strange individual. I guess he was an architect or something.
Yes, he was, but he's also deeply involved in
the occult. Yeah.
Right.
Also, I noticed getting up on the website of Barbara Marx Hubbard. She mentioned in 1966 that the world's population is doubling.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment, Ray. This is Ray from Santa Cruz. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is Open Light Wednesday. If you have a comment, get something you'd like to talk about, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And of course, we have Ray calling in. Mm-hmm. And Ray was simply bringing up that Barbara Marx Hubbard and the World Future Society. And Ray was saying that Barbara Marx Hubbard's website, she talks about in the 60s about the danger of
overpopulation,
right?
And she said that it needs to be stopped.
Right.
That's what her own words were. They need to be stopped. So that, to me, that suggests that she's one of them, you know, she's one of the people that wants to reduce the world's population, like Jacques Cousteau and the other, you know, the others. But interestingly enough, I think the most interesting thing to me about the whole thing is there's a connection between her and Alice Bailey.
Yes, absolutely.
And those people. And I think Edgar Casey could be involved in it. I don't know.
Casey was, of course, a mystic. He was,
I think, involved. He was possessed.
And this whole... he was accessing the other dimension. And Casey has an amazing history. He did amazing things. He was actually able to diagnose people just by knowing what their name was and come up with treatments for them. And people all over the world were getting better. But what they did not understand, this is all demonic, and the information that Casey was putting out was coming from the other dimension, and many of these people became demonically possessed because of their association with him. But as far as Barbara Marks Hubbard was concerned, she wrote a book called The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, and we have the pages from the original manuscript before it was, of course, sanitized and then published by under the auspices of the Lawrence Rockefeller Endowment for the Humanities. But in the original document, which we'll be glad to provide the pages to everybody, the book, of course, is rewriting of the Book of Revelation, the Revelation of John, the last book of the Bible, as redictated to her by a spirit. She called the Christ Spirit. The book was channeled to her, in my estimation, by a demonic being. And in that, she goes to Revelation 6:8, and I look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and Hades followed shortly thereafter, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world by war, by famine, by disease, and then she goes on to say, you know, there's certain bad seed, and they're just going to have to be removed, and they're going to have to be eliminated. We're going to have to kill a quarter of the world's population, those who will not evolve into a higher consciousness, and that is not your job, my dear. That is ours, for we are the riders of the pale horse, death. We'd be glad to, anybody would like to see that, we'd be glad to send you the pages from her book. This woman ran for the vice presidency in 1984 on the Democratic primary against Geraldine Ferraro. Fortunately, she lost, but she's still there. And pushing, of course, her occult agenda on people across America. And she looks like such a kindly woman, gray-haired, grandmotherly.
Yeah.
But she comes from the associated with the other dimension.
Mm. And you know, it was interesting because I looked up Alice Bailey on the internet, and it talked about the initiation ceremony being the person was taken over by, at first, very fearful. But taken over by dark spiritual forces, it talks about that. It talks about people being possessed, and then they're under Satan's control after that.
You're absolutely
so
right.
Apparently Alice Bailey was under Satan's control. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, she wrote over 20 books. They were all channeled to her by a spirit known as George. Okay, well, I'm glad to see you're studying these things, Ray.
Yeah.
It's so vitally important that people understand there is another dimension. And this is the common denominator behind everything going on today.
I had one other thing I wanted to mention. Daniel Patrick Moynihan, was he in league or was he associated with Leo Strauss?
I really can't tell you. I really can't tell you.
But I know he was a racist. I know that.
Well, he certainly was not on our side. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my other question.
Okay. God bless. Good to hear from you, Ray.
Thanks, Bruce.
And just keep doing your studying and help us get the word out.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. And again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. Speaking of the EPA, we should never forget about MTBE.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I hear the music.
Oh, that's good. You talk. I'll you have to talk.
Well, for 3 or 4 years at least, it was in a high concentration in all the gasoline, virtually all the gasoline.
Well, of course, remember, they put it in there to clean up the air, and there was not one study that showed it worked. In fact, it didn't work. It did not cut down, of course, on pollution. It not only contaminated the air, it contaminated the water, and, of course, it was carcinogenic, and it wiped out the water supply and wells in Southern California and towns. We'll be back in just a moment. Mayo. This is Dr. Stan back here. We have Mike calling. Mike, did you know how this whole thing came about, for why MTBE was put into our gasoline?
Well, apparently it was in use since the late 70s in more diluted forms, and it helped things like engine knocking, and in a general sense, I think it helped the engines run better. And I was always under the impression that it perhaps did make the emissions a little cleaner.
It really did. There were scientific studies later done, but what really happened was that Bob Dole, of course, was the senator from, I think, from Kansas, and the people back there wanted, of course, to, get subsidies for ethanol. And so they gave Bob Dole $100,000 for his foundation. He had a private foundation, and then he got legislation passed that mandated that they would have to add something to the gasoline so it would burn cleaner and cut down on emissions. And, of course, then the legislation as it was written, in which he participated in, required either ethanol or MTBE. Well, of course, in the Midwest, then, of course, they could, make the ethanol to put it in. And out here on the West Coast, why, of course, I think it was Atlantic Richfield. People were working with Pete Wilson, the governor here. In fact, it was my understanding that Pete Wilson's right-hand man had either come from ARCO or went to work for them afterwards, and they got that put into law that we would have to have MTBE here. And it was a fiasco. I mean, it cost us hundreds of millions of dollars to get it out. There were all sorts of lawsuits. I don't know how many people's homes were destroyed, their water supplies were destroyed. But it all got back to the $100,000 that Bob Dole got. Now, if you get $100,000 given to your foundation, and then you get legislation passed, I consider that a bribe. That's as bad as anything that Jack Abrahoff did recently. But, of course, Robert Dole is one of those people, great war hero. No, he's a corrupt politician like the rest of them. And he was willing to sacrifice and endanger the lives of people all across America so he could get $100,000.
And now he, along with Donna Shalala, have been appointed as, this, I believe, just the two members of the board that's supposed to oversee the Veterans Administration overall.
Yeah, that's, of course, having to do with Walter Reed Hospital.
Yeah, right.
It really gives you that warm, fuzzy feeling, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, real fuzzy, not so warm. But MTBE, methyl tertiary butyl ethers, was not only destroyed all the things like you said, but people's health.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Mike from Santa Cruz. Well, Mike is just commenting on the MTBE that was put into our gasoline, and it was cleared by the Environmental Protection Agency. And we started out the program talking about the corruption of the Environmental Protection Agency. And we're still talking about the corruption of the Environmental Protection Agency. People there, now, there are a lot of good people who work for the EPA, but they'll come up with the conclusions like the MTBE is not safe, or fluoride is not safe, or it's not safe to fluoridate the eggs that we're giving to people with poisonous doses, and the administrators go right along and do it because they're on the take, and they're going to get nice fat jobs when they get out, and then I always suspect there is another agenda that energizes some of these wicked people. Anything else you want to say?
Well, we had for years massive public outcry against the MTBE and massive solid scientific evidence against it, and they insisted on continuing with the program. And when they finally conceded, it was still not to be removed for another 3 years. And I just figured, well, that must be about what they figure it'll need to completely pollute our environment, because it doesn't go away. It leaches through everything. It's water-soluble. It can't even be contained in the tanks, in the gasoline tanks. What I was saying a little while ago, I think that the picture was that it actually did clean up the emissions themselves somewhat, but in the meanwhile, out came spewing this insane carcinogen, or whatever you want to call it, that would aggravate people's pre-existing conditions and cause dizziness and general sickness and headaches and who knows what else.
Well, while you're assignment, you go up on the internet and find out what the scientific studies are. Did it really clean up the emissions or not? And you let us know when we talk to you next. Okay.
Okay.
Anything else, Mike?
Yeah. Well, just if anybody wants to, you can type in on Google EPA MTBE and go to the Wikipedia site first, and let that be a good starting point.
All right. Fine. Thanks very much, and I think the point's well made. Well, let's go to Steve, who's calling. Waiting patiently on the line from Pennsylvania. Hi, Steve. What part of Pennsylvania in?
Central Western Pennsylvania.
How are you hearing? Is shortwave internet or what?
Shortwave tonight. Coming in real good.
Okay, very good. And you know that if you listen to our afternoon program, we're changing to 9.480. The afternoon program will still be the evening program on 5.755. Okay, do you have a question or comment, Steve?
Well, a question and a comment, since you are a doctor. You know, this pet food scare, it's not really a scare, it's reality, and it's in so much of the, such a broad range of pet food. They really, I guess they're claiming we don't really know what it is. You know, now, if it's a grain and it's that widely used, why aren't people alarmed about this? Because if it's that widely used in pet food, certainly it's used in human food somewhere along the line.
It is. Apparently, they're talking about a wheat gluten. Now, I'm not an expert on that, but certainly there are glutens in the wheat. And the fact that they're concerned about it, I think that we should all be concerned. What are they putting into these specially prepared foods that might be harmful? Literally to millions of Americans. We know they're fluoridating. You know, they're fluoridating a lot of the water. They're putting MSG and NutraSweet into the childhood foods. They know it produces pathological obesity and cancer and fertility changes. They know about that. They just want the American people to know. They keep talking about, isn't it terrible we've got all this obesity?
Well, I remember right after 9/11 when Ashcroft got up there and he said, you know, it would be so easy for the terrorists to contaminate our food supply.
But you see, the Environmental Protection Agency and the NIH are contaminating our food supply. They're contaminating our vaccines. They're contaminating the fillings we have in our mouth with mercury. They know the deleterious effects. The scientific studies are there, and the average American has never heard.
Well, I'm just positively certain that there's, you know, like your dogs and cats, they eat that same food from that same manufacturer every day of the week. That's why they get this kidney problem and die. Where a person, if it's in our Rice Krispies, we might only have that once or twice a week, you know, so we're not going to know where it came from.
Well, one of these days, I'm very much afraid they're going to wake up. They're going to find out they have poisoned a large percentage of our population.
I think they intend to.
I think they're doing it on purpose. In fact,
yes,
talking to our friend, Dr. Mark Geyer, who's one of the leading experts on the mercury in the vaccines. You know, today, 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. In other words, a measurable neurodevelopmental abnormality. Their mind is not working right. But according to Mark, he thinks that every child has been contaminated to some extent by the mercury in the vaccines, by the other things that they put in there, the aluminum, and certainly if you are in a fluoridated area and you get the vaccine shots, and then, of course, the fluoride acts as a carrier to get the vaccine, the aluminum, into your brain. And I'll tell you what, aluminum is not healthy for our brains. This is one reason why kids really can't think clearly.
Right. And the other thing I believe, too, is that those people that are in these secret societies like the Illuminati and whatnot, the reason they call them illuminated is because they know they have the understanding. And I'm sure if we could find somebody that would let us know about it, there's a way to read those packages and find out if they're eating the good food or if they're not eating the good food.
Well, I think you have to learn how to really read the packages. I know my wife, first of all, when our son came back from the military, I had developed severe asthma there. He was allergic to just about everything. He couldn't take sulfates, he couldn't take nitrates, couldn't take MSG, so my wife had to learn to read the package inserts and understand that the package inserts lie. In other words, the instead of saying MSG, they say hydrolyzed proteins. And we carry a book called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life that has all the secret phrases they use for the poisons they're putting in the food. And you certainly do not want to eat anything with MSG in it. You certainly do not want to eat anything, you know, with NutraSweet in it. And there are really many things out there that are deleterious to your health, and we try to cover these things here on our programs, but you have to, really, you should not be eating packaged foods. You should not be eating these things. You should stay with, regular cereals and not these prepackaged ones, because you never know what they're putting in them.
Right. And the other thing I'd like to say is I noticed that Arlen Specter, before he said he was going to retire and not run again, now he says, oh, yeah, I'm going to run for another 10 years. He just said that, I think, yesterday. Well, the man's already 77 years old. About a year ago, he was completely bald because he had cancer. Today, he's got more hair than I've got. I mean, some of these senators are getting younger. They're not getting older.
I don't know. Maybe they got a pill there that we should be taking.
Well, I think they're keeping the life extension drugs for these people, and who knows, they might end up, being our gods, never dying.
Well, I'll tell you what, I really do believe that the resveratrol products, if properly packaged, really this is the Longevinex, the molecule that comes from the red wine, really does, the studies have shown, it really does, prolong life, at least in the lower forms of life, and now they have the mouse studies that shows that really the mice were fed resveratrol lived, almost half again as long as the other mice. So it's something to look into, but be sure you get the good product, because most of them that are available off the shelves here at health food store just don't work.
Okay.
Anything
right,
else you want
doctor.
To say before we let you go?
Thank you. No, that's fine. Thank
all right,
you very much.
Thanks for calling. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got the Peter calling from Salinas. Hi, Peter. How are you hearing us?
I'm hearing you just fine, Dr. Stan. And as usual, you're shining a light on the darkness that's perpetually creeping into all of our lives. I thank you for that.
Well, we do the best we can anyway. All right, so what would you like to talk about?
Well, since it's food that's on the menu, no pun intended, I'd like to include a little information on the genetically modified food that they're trying to put into our refrigerators and into our children's lunch boxes. And you pointed out that they've managed to include a pesticide now genetically built into the food. And I would like to also comment that they have done something that the Bible has warned us against, Dr. Stan, and that is what God has put together, let no man cut asunder. And they've broken down the wall between the plant world and the animal world. They're able to take genetic material from plants and put them into animals.
And, of course, they take things like a fish,
yes.
something from a fish, a gene from a fish,
yes.
and they put it into a tomato.
That's right.
They've modified so many of the things that we eat, and you don't know whether these, of course, naturally bred, or certainly, and certainly for years, they've always worked to try to breed better crops. But there's a lot of difference between breeding better crops and genetically modifying them and using, say, a virus or some sort of an antibiotic-resistant gene and then putting it with a fish gene and putting it into the various crops that you're going to be eating. Because we don't know what the long-term deleterious effects on that. We do know that certain of these modified foods have led to infertility in animals and devastated the farmers who use them. This was actually a study. We have a book called GMOs, Beware the Genetically Modified Food. And it tells the story about this poor farmer who was feeding his pigs genetically modified corn. And he noticed that the pigs were not having any little piglets. And, of course, you know, the whole idea is you have your big pigs, like make little pigs, and those little pigs grow up to be big pigs, and they make more little pigs. And but, of course, all of his hogs were sterile. And that it was eventually, of course, he found out just about the time he went bankrupt, that it was genetically modified food, and he was able to get the word out and at least save a lot of the people who were working with him before they lost their farms as well. So if it's doing that to the pigs, what's it doing to the human beings?
You know,
or maybe there are too many people in the world, and if we just fed them enough of these genetically modified food, why, of course, it becomes sterile too.
You know, there's no way to control what they've released and unleashed on the world right now. And as you keep pointing out about the bees, about this pig farmer, about different farmers and different, you know, groups of people across this country, the consequences are going to be devastating. They're not going to be pretty, and I believe they are going to be biblical in proportion, and that we need to wake up as you do every day and night on your program, Dr. Stan, and again, bring these things to our attention. We have to educate ourselves. We have to ask the questions. We can't accept what they give us, exactly as you said. We really, really, really need to get back to our own victory garden. There's nothing more valuable on this planet than the food that you can grow and control yourself.
And I think you're absolutely right. And we really ought to be putting in our fruit trees, and we ought to be preparing to grow our own seeds. And so what they're doing, of course, is having these hybrid seeds. And hybrid seeds, won't reproduce themselves. And so this is the beauty. You buy the hybrid seeds, you get this great crop. But you can't save the seeds and use them again. They're doing this all throughout the world. They're effectively blocking farmers from doing what farmers have done for thousands of years, and that is saving some of the seeds for next year's crop. But with the hybrid seeds, of course, they will not germinate. And so this is why, of course, we've in the past suggested Jerry Guidetti's products. In fact, I really should give Jerry a call and see if she would like to come back on our program and talk about the seeds that she has. I think it's so vitally important that people start thinking about putting in their own gardens, growing their own food, learning how to fertilize and how to do these things safely and use natural insecticides and pesticides rather than the poisons that are being put on so many of our products today. And really, they're putting terrible things onto our food, and you have no idea what you're really eating when you buy them in the grocery store. But you notice there's no evidence of any insects getting into them. So what killed all those insects that used to be in our food?
You know, Dr. Stan, it's the power is never in the answers. The power is always in the questions that we ask. And I appreciate, and God bless you, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
God bless you. Well, thanks very much for calling, Pete. Peter, that's Peter from Salinas. And let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Jack. Stan, I'm all right. A little tired.
I know. Well, it's sort of late back there in Michigan. It's after the witching hour, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And
I appreciate you staying up to listen to Radio Liberty.
You got it. Absolutely. The reception, I think there's a lot of storm activity tonight. It's really in and out a lot.
Sorry.
So, there's this booklet on bee pollen called Bee Pollen Miracle Food by a Frenchman, Dr. Felix Murat, M-U-R-A-T. It's a 1985. And he states that it should be noted the havoc insecticides bring about the bees. It says at times absolutely catastrophic when the bees land on flowers and plants that have been sprayed. They die by the thousands, never reach their hives. They fall to the ground on the way back home, paralyzed, unable to fly, and then die in agonizing, painful death. It's been reported time and again that entire apiaries have been decimated, completely depopulated, and their owners ruined.
How long ago was this written?
1985.
Well, we have one of our friends, David Sibley. In fact, he's with Ready Reserve Foods that we work with for dehydrated food, but he's actually going out and working with the beekeepers in the Southern California, trying to learn as much as he can about this, because, of course, this is his business, supplying food, but he wants to know what's happening to the bees. There are a lot of theories out there, and it may very well be these insecticides that they're using, and maybe combinations of these insecticides and fungicides. This is one of the current theories.
Yeah, and I would also say, Dr. Stan, that the genetically modified crops, I actually, over the holidays, mistakenly had a golden potato. It was golden on the outside and nice golden color on the inside, which I had never seen, but I accidentally had several, and my GI tract was in a major battle for a couple days.
Well, I'm glad that you're still with us, you know. These things are really potentially dangerous.
I had no idea.
Well, I think we're in for some very, very difficult times. Why don't you just hang on here? We'll let you comment during the this last little segment. This is Dr. Stan, and of course, always enjoy our time with you. The open lines, we always invite your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Never know what we're going to bring up, and hope we at least can contribute something. But what really pleases me most are people like Ray. Ray's up on the Internet. He's learning. He's going to tell other people, and that's what you've got to do, too. Well, Jack, did you have anything else you'd like to say? We've got about 3 minutes.
Indeed, Dr. Stan, you mentioned chlorination and fluoridation. I think the fact is many of the pharmaceutical drugs are chlorinated and fluorinated, are they not?
Well, yes, but the most dangerous ones really are the fluoridated ones. I mean, certainly all the psychotropic drugs are fluoridated, the Prozac. You go back, we actually give a talk on the hidden agenda, and we go into all the drugs that are fluoridated.
Well,
but certainly the chlorinated ones are not as good for you. Actually, probably one of the safest chlorinated drugs or products was DDT. The new ones, like, for instance, Splenda, that was being developed actually as a pesticide. And somebody got a little bit on their finger and noticed that it was sweet. This is basically a chlorinated hydrocarbon. And so instead of using it as a pesticide, they're using it as a sugar substitute all across America. And people don't understand. This was designed to kill insects.
Well, I'll say this. When I used to swim a lot, Dr. Stan, in the swimming pools, I would, inside swimming pools, I would get these brainstem headaches. The only time I got them was when I was in the natatorium swimming.
Well, of course, they put so much chlorine, used to put so much chlorine in the pools. One thing is, of course, we need to chlorinate our water to take out the impurities. But if you're in an area with a lot of chlorine in the water, you ought to have the big Berkey or the black Berkey filters, because that will actually take the chlorine out and clean that up and do away with the chlorine taste. So you should not be drinking heavily chlorinated water. Unfortunately, we do have a very convenient means of getting that out.
In fact, Dr. Stan, I think it was the 84 Olympics, and the European swimmers refused to swim in the pools until they provided, I guess, ozonated water in the pool.
Well, I think that we have to be concerned. I mean, certainly you do not need to put overly chlorinated unless the water is terribly, terribly contaminated. Water chlorination of water has been, and safe drinking water has been a tremendous advantage and part of our civilization here. But of course, it can be abused, and I always wonder what else they could put in the water if they really wanted to produce massive casualties. There really are people who want to kill off most of the people here in the United States, and one day I really feel that this is going to come about. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Jack. Always good to hear from you. Bye bye. All right, fine. That was Jack, who's calling us from Michigan, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're really dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And as you know, we have almost 60 outlets every single week, shortwave, internet, satellite. We're on two or three satellites. But believe me, it's an expensive proposition. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to really understand this incredible story of planned population reduction, let me suggest several things. One is the talk I gave for the Prophecy Club. It's called Planned Population Reduction. It's either the video or the DVD, and they're both available. And then we have a talk. It's called Population Control. It's a video talk I gave. I have a four-tape set on population control. We have the monograph that we wrote called the Population Control Agenda. Now, that's posted on our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you're certainly welcome to go up there and pull it down and read it. Or, of course, if you'd like to get a copy, you can always call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. And then we have something rather new. It's called Mercury Autism and the Global Population Control. It's by Dr. David Ayoub. And Dr. Ayoub is a wonderful young man, he's a physician, who got started in his quest for understanding after listening to some of our programs, and he has really taken off and run with the ball and done a far better job on much of this than I ever have, with all sorts of documentation. And his DVD, I should say his video, which we have readily available, and we'll have the DVD before long, but we have the video available. It comes with a CD-ROM with thousands of pages of information. We do carry, of course, Dr. David MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee back in 1969, where he calls for creating a new disease for which there would be no treatment at all. It's a rather extensive testimony, but it's there. He wants $10 million. He says some people think we shouldn't do this because it's a new form of mass killing, but we want the money. We want to do it. We do have the National Security Study Memorandum 200. Came out in 1974 that laid out the basis of American foreign policy. And you know what it really is? It's all about population control. That's National Security Study Memorandum 200. Came out over the name of that great American patriot, Henry Kissinger. So, if you'd like to know more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You'd like to know about genetically modified foods. We have a four-tape set on that, and then we have a book called GMOs, Beware Genetically Modified Foods. Oh my goodness, we've got all sorts of things. We've got a four-tape set on why do we still have cancer, a four-tape set on genocide, a four-tape set on Laetril. If any of you would like a free copy of our January newsletter, which contains the Fitzgerald Report, which was entered into the Congressional Record in August of 1953, talking about the suppression of effective treatments for cancer 54 years ago. Why? You just give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and ask for a copy of the January newsletter. And is this really true? Yes, it actually is true. In fact, we carry a copy of the book, A World Without Cancer, by Ed Griffin. Very, very good. Going into the fact that the Sloan Kettering Clinic, the cancer clinic, actually modified or gamed their scientific studies to show that Laetril didn't work. Why? How could you have a cancer clinic if there weren't any cases of cancer? So they've openly withheld treatments for many years. If you have not yet heard our four tapes set on The New Order of the Barbarians, you need to get it. The New Order of the Barbarians comes with a transcript. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.